Agents of Smooch. Today's mission is to save the world from killer mosquitoes. We are off to Vista Del Mar with Barb and Star. So pack your curlers, rope, and culottes. We're on our way to Florida. I'm director of Smooch, Annette Weirstra, and joining me for Talking Club is Agent Moises Chulian, who wisely suggested this topic.
I'm an Irish-accented clam inspector in town on top business.
I'm feeling a little hot already.
Hello there.
We also have Agent Kathy Campbell.
I have my professional podcaster culottes on today, and I'm ready to go.
You never know what those culottes are good for.
So many things.
Totally. We also have Agent Kirsten Gorick. Hello, Kirsten.
Hello, Director. If I had a sharp, sparkly friendship bracelet, I would be wearing it right now just in case I needed it.
I'd be wearing the matching one with you.
Yeah, you would.
And last but not least, Agent Jean McDonald. Hello, Jean.
Hello, Director. I am here in my capacity as Florida expert.
Ooh, I have been to Florida once and I'm not an expert.
I lived there for 7 years.
Yeah. Well, I grew up there.
Cool. So we're going to talk about Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, which is a recent comedy starring Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo and Jamie Dornan as, was it Edgar? I can't quite remember. He seemed very nice. Yeah. This is a story of friendship, official couples, sunshine, and large-scale revenge plots all set in Vista Del Mar. And I'm going to give first dibs on this one to Moises, who has been saying for a long time that we should all watch this movie.
I feel validated by the fact that the instant various people finished watching this, they messaged me going, "You were so right. You were so right." It's like they made a movie exactly for this show. I love how incredibly deep stacked the gags and jokes are. There are loads of things that maybe they were scripted. Maybe they were riffed in the moment. Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo are talented enough comedians that either thing could be the case. As much as people would tout Anchorman as a movie that could be rewatched over and over and over, it really is a movie that gets old after a couple watches, and there are a bunch of quotable things. This movie has Anchorman beat when it comes to quotable, randomly hilarious stuff. Whether it's the way that Barb pronounces the name Don Cheadle, or any number of things. Like there aren't just 20 really quotable lines or funny situations in this movie. That is really a couple of the funniest people in the business at the height of their powers. I wish that more people had gotten to see it. Thus far, I think it's going to end up being a hit, especially once it hits a major streaming service of some sort. Jamie Dornan actually gets to be funny and charming and sexy, unlike 50 Shades of Grey.
Inevitably, we have to bring up how much we hate that movie.
But I mean, to circle things back around, the beginning of the movie, I warned everybody, when you start the movie, you're going to be like, am I watching the right movie? Because you have no idea what's going on at first, because it's just a young man throwing newspapers in a neighborhood. And then he goes into a subterranean lair that looks like you've entered some sort of cheap James Bond spoof. And
Austin Powers, perhaps?
Yeah, it's like Austin Powers with a smaller budget. Yes. And it is so many wonderful things. It is a delight to put on while you're folding laundry. It is a delight to put on and watch with other people, I'm sure. Not that I've had that experience as of yet.
Not yet.
But it ticks all the boxes. I love this movie so much. And I cannot wait to be able to hipster claim, "Yeah, I remember when I was into it before everybody else was talking about it." So, you know, yeah, I want every day to feel like I'm arriving at the Palm Vista Hotel as a guest.
Not the Palm Vista. Motel.
No, the Palm Vista Hotel.
Hotel.
Salon and spa, I think.
And salon and spa. Yes. I forgot. Yeah. I forgot.
Very important keywords.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to say, so Moises was the bearer of my messaging as I was watching this movie, because I wasn't watching it with anyone else. And I had so many thoughts that I had to get out. And I like nothing more than to message people while I'm watching movies that I know that they have watched, or television shows or anything. It's a form of community theater style things that I just really enjoy. And the very first message that I sent Moises was, I am 3 minutes into Barb and Star, and what the hell am I watching? I had no idea what this movie was, and I'm so excited. And I feel like that kind of sums everything up. It's best to go in blind and just embrace and enjoy the movie as it rolls over you. Bonus if you have somebody that you can message who has seen it, witnessed it, experienced it before, so you can, you know, spill all your feelings to them, or with, you know, somebody else in your household to enjoy it. Basically, I want to make sure that the first part of this podcast doesn't say anything deep, so that not spoilers, because like we'll get to that later, but like having a solid, hey, if you want an experience similar to a wide variety of sleeper hits in the past, go in blind to this movie.
Yeah, don't even watch the trailer. Just
don't
watch
the trailer.
Yeah, I don't think the trailer does any sort of a major job selling it to you if you're not already marginally interested in watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't watch the trailer. I didn't really know anything about it except Moises saying, like, come on, get on this train.
Waiting for you.
I was desperate for people to watch this so that I could talk to people about it.
You know, there are some people in this world, when they say, just watch this, I will do it. And Moises is one of them. And so one of my friends who heard I was going to be watching this, they said, oh, like they go to Florida. And I said, oh, Florida is involved. And then that was really the only thing I knew. And since it's 100% fake Florida, I wasn't even spoiled on that. And I did. I just was like grinning the whole time.
So I watched it, Annette, you'd seen it already once when you and I rewatched it, and I saw it for the first time. And so I did have the lovely joy of like responding and connecting to Annette as I went on this wild ride on a
in which
boat.
I decided and Kirsten agreed that we're 100% going to dress up. It's them. I'm Barb. She's Star.
I'm Star. It's going to happen. It has to happen.
Also, we're starting a talking club, everyone. A talking club.
So you can all join our talking club.
I think we already started a talking club.
Yeah, I think it's called a podcast.
It's called a podcast, but we don't have any of those Nazi rules.
Except for, I like the rule where you can't swear, but you can use the F-bomb.
Yeah. I do feel like I'm going to use a quote from the movie, because this movie felt like a soul douche for me.
Yes.
it was exactly what I needed and wanted, and I didn't know what I was getting into. And I think I saw the trailer a million years ago when maybe this was first announced, and I didn't get much out of it. I knew I liked a lot of the people in it, but I wasn't really sure what I'd be getting into. I think in addition to the really, really brilliant writing that we see and probably some of the improv, the physical comedy really stood out for me as well. And I think it showed the range of some of these actors, like Jamie getting to be, like Moises said, just such a different character type than I think a lot of people are used to from him. I laughed at 50 Shades of Grey, but I wasn't supposed to. So in this case, it was so much better. It kind of felt like a revelation where he just kind of got to play and have fun and go over the top. And I think they all sort of had that free range and that support. And it really shows, and that they, you know, there's no stifling of impulses, and they just really went for it, which I think just paid off in so many ways.
Jamie Dornan getting to play super, super earnest, to the point of hilarity on purpose, as in like the script is in on the joke, that mm-hmm. is the joke, mm-hmm. rather than it's a joke because it it is just ridiculous, which is what he gets to do in 50 Shades. Like, that's one part of it. And then there is, he gets his own entire musical number. Which, yes. I mean, what a blessing.
Amazing.
Yeah. For me, this movie kind of hit the same spot that Eurovision hit last year. Mm. Not because the movies are so the same, but just because it's that funny, lighthearted hit of happiness and ridiculousness that just is still the sort of thing. A year later, that's all I want. Don't give me anything serious. Just give me frivolous silliness that's well performed and well written and well pulled together.
And I think it's important to compare silliness and fun too. Like, there's a level of sheer joy and happiness and just fun in every sense of the word. I can totally visualize the set designers having fun and the costume department having fun, hair and makeup having fun, writing, performing, you know, the sounds and musical, like, every piece of this film just makes it seem like the people that were involved had so much fun.
And so much of it pays off. So many of the things that in other movies, you know, they'll do riff takes and you'll get some memorable funny lines out of it. But things that come off like that in this movie get paid off later, like just a random conversation about the name Trish and what it connotes about a person on the plane ride isn't paid off until the end of the movie. The culottes that have been mentioned already. This opens like an art film with the definition of a word on a blank title card, which is the first inscrutable thing about the movie. And the culottes are incredibly important, not just as a costuming choice, but they're very integral to the plot for reasons that people who've seen the movie know, that make one of the movie posters make more sense. Even it is payoff after payoff after payoff, and it pays off stuff that you don't expect to be paid off. There are the perfunctory bits of the plot that you expect. You know that well. They're obviously very bad employees at this furniture store. That's going to get paid off, and that they're going to get let go from the furniture store so that they have a reason to go to Vista Del Mar. You know, the obsession with Jamie Dornan's character, Edgar, as I'll continue to pronounce it incorrectly, because that way it rhymes. Barb and Star go with Edgar to Vista Del Mar. Him being really, really focused on the notion of being together as an official couple, with the person that he's into. On the one hand, like, that's often not the thing that that the guy in a movie like this gets to play, and that is really all he wants. We know that he's going to get paid off on that in some respect, because I mean, look at him, he's Jamie Dornan. Yeah. I mean, what are we going to do with him? But it is such a bundle of delight. And there are only so many murder documentaries and true crime miniseries and news reports that I can watch these days. It is such a bright, beautiful, like, Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper of a movie.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Major Lisa Frank vibes.
I really love that when they open up and the two of them are sitting there and talking, and they're sitting on their couch and they're just, you know, sort of riffing on things that they remember or they think or they whatever, and they're having this kind of, you know, vapid conversation, and you do not know for quite a while that they are sitting in their furniture store. and that's the point. Like, they don't really, I mean, they work there, but they don't even know when they work there. I love the the notion that they come in when the other one is working. And sometimes they just come in, the both of them come in because they like their little, you know, home away from home in the mall.
That's where they host Thanksgiving, guys.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think what I also really like is that even in the middle of all of the bonkers things that happen, and there are many bonkers things that happen. There is a true character arc for both of these women, mm-hmm. Not just in terms of their friendship, but in terms of the journey they're taking as individuals. And I think that it's a really beautiful story for each of them in their own right. And so it's not only fun, but it kind of has a really satisfying full circle effect for me.
Yeah, it isn't just surface level. You really get, you as the viewer, establish a relationship with Barb and Star where it isn't just, you know, funny that you get to see them stacked like a club sandwich on top of Jamie Dornan the morning after.
Best club sandwich ever.
That's a Jamie sandwich.
We'll all take a piece, thank you. yeah, it just, I couldn't agree more, Kirsten. Wait, Kirsten?
Or Kirsten, you got it right.
Kirsten, yeah. Okay, see, that's the thing. You got to make sure that you pronounce these things correctly.
Kirsten.
The thing in Hollywood is there's this whole deal of, well, there are certain things that women over 40 just aren't given the opportunity to do at a certain budget level. It all has to live in like indie dramas that 12 people see or something. And it always has to be really sad. And it's delightful to see incredibly among the most talented people working in Hollywood, writing and performing in both Annie Malone and Kristen Wiig's cases. It's wonderful to see them just get to do their thing. I love that most of the quick cameos that we get are from incredibly talented female comedians. Fortune Feimster is in the talking club. I can't remember Phyllis from The Office's real name, which is embarrassing, but I remember that I love her. You know, she all she wants to do is talk about horses. And she's
her
so
name
good.
Is Phyllis too. Smith.
Phyllis Smith. That I knew it was Phyllis, but I couldn't
remember.
I was like, oh, her incredibly unique last name.
I love her.
Smith. She's so good.
So many moments in that talking club, which just randomly pops up just as like contrast to what's happening, is just beautiful comic timing of like pause, look over there, and random bananasness that is so funny.
And it makes you fear Vanessa Bayer just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
She is fierce.
She's so
don't
fierce.
Take away my hot dog soup.
Does that lock you out because you're like 30 seconds late?
Yeah. You're locked out. You get your hot dog soup taken
rules.
Away. In the credits, your tea is about to be poured into her teacup. it's disgusting and stupid and hilarious. And of course, the person who instigates where our heroines take us is Wendy McClendon Covey from The Goldbergs, from Reno 911, from mm-hmm. Bridesmaids, from so many other things. She basically just shows up and we never see her again, but she just drops in to do the Wendy McClendon Covey thing, and she's delightful. And you know, we have little cameos, Ian Gomez from Cougar Town and so many other things as their boss at the furniture store. He's delightful. Andy Garcia dropping in to be the Silver Fox snack that is basically his career right now, as far as I can tell. he just shows up to do that kind of a thing. It is nice to have the proportional relationship of things, turned on its head where we get a larger quantity of these incredibly talented women who, you know, are the wife or the girlfriend or the sister or something that, you know, get four lines in another movie. They are some of these threads that run through the whole movie. And like the talking club, like we said, just kind of drops in every once in a while.
Which is so great. I love moments like that in a movie that are able to just exist, so it allows you to take a breath from what ends up being, you know, a pretty intense story plot line, serious end of the world type things, but you just kind of have a moment to breathe and laugh. And other movies will do it differently with different, you know, vignettes or whatever, but by having this go back to the talking club, you know that there's not going to maybe not going to be an explosion. Like there's not going to be these big things happening, but it's still like, oh, you get excited. You're not just like, okay, cool, I'll run to the bathroom or let me go fill up my water. You want to stay. You want to enjoy and discover what hilarity is going to happen with the talking club.
You're invested in them, even though you see them for like a total of like, what, 3 minutes the whole movie, you know? So it's just like, but I care deeply about these women. For me, one of the things I liked was that I realized the Kirsten and Aunt Kristen. Sorry.
I love this so much. Kirstens are going to take over the world.
Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo are both born in 1973. Just like me. So it's like seeing women exactly the same age as me, their makeup and the way they're made up, like their skin, aside from like the hilarious wigs that are sort of out of time and space, who knows, but like they don't have like they have wrinkles. They actually, you can see some freckles on their skins. They look like women, like they look like
actual
women
human
who
beings
are in their late 40s and not and like they're not made up to look anything other than women of a certain age, and are still like walking through that club and all the guys are like turn around and they're still kind of hot stuff there.
They are hot,
you know.
They are hot no qualifiers, though I could add loads of adjectives in a complimentary way.
We don't often see that on screen, and even as they're dressed and with their wigs and with their like old lady vacation clothes, you know, it's just like, yeah, you know what? They're still hot. They look good. They feel good. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I've been told by sources in the American Midwest that they are rocking a look that is still very much a daily look for women of that age in certain, you know, parts surrounding Ohio and the greater St. Louis area and so on.
Well,
so apparently this look is timeless.
Shows.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my mom has a wide variety of those items in her closet right now.
I feel like I spent the first, I don't know, 30 minutes like trying to spot a cell phone to figure out what time.
And you're kind of timeless, right?
Because like the hair and the outfits, and it was just, yeah, when Jamie's character Edgar showed up at the airport, I think he finally had a cell phone, and I was like, aha, that thing is not the size of a brick. It has to be somewhat modern.
And I love that his line, they have this, you know, sign that says Vista Del Mar, so you know that you're in Vista Del Mar, and he walks through the frame and just goes, I'm here, really seriously, because they had to establish that he has also arrived. They get exactly how ridiculous it is that they are underlining, highlighting, and marking with washi tape all of the dumb plot elements, because I guess they also have to have a plot in addition to a funny high concept. But it just they are unafraid to keep doubling down on that the whole time. Yeah. It's just delightful.
Everything, the other spy, is his name something Bunkle?
Darley Bunkle.
Darley Bunkle.
Darley Bunkle, age 41, 171 pounds.
Everything he did is amazing. Address. And that scene where he's wearing the mask in the buffet, I was like, well, someone got the pandemic memo finally.
Yes.
But it was such a, like, every little piece that he had, just like, oh, it just brought me so much joy. And the physical comedy of him and Edgar fighting at the end, I think I told him it looked like they were tumbling toddlers in, like, a gymnastics class.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was just
exactly.
So brilliant, and just exactly what you wanted, right? It wasn't like, you know, these two guys were going to bust out karate moves. Like, what were they going to do? They're going to tussle in the sand like a bunch of two-year-olds.
Right.
Yeah. And the whole time I was like, even though he was revealing so much, you know, when he was supposedly, you know, this big spy character, especially those signs on the door, microchip is in here.
Right.
But the yard sale killed
it was
me.
Just like, but I was like, oh, shoot, I totally recognize his voice, but I don't know who he is. And I was... and I wasn't focusing enough because I was sort of cooking and watching this movie. And when it was revealed, I was like, oh, Damon Wayans Jr. Of course it is.
Of course.
And I love seeing him too.
I think we also have to talk about the fact that Kristen Wiig is playing two roles.
Yes.
In this movie. Although the first time I watched it, I was like, wait a second. Wait, is that...
Is this the wrong Kristen Wiig movie? Because
her? That, right? I thought, what?
So, I was so confused reading. So first off, I'm very, very, I have major face blindness. I have a really difficult time like recognizing anybody. I would be fooled by Clark Kent and Superman. Like just laying that out there. And even reading the IMDb, which had the name, I still didn't get it until like the big climax scene at the end.
That's awesome.
Yeah, even reading the information did not help my brain.
No, it was a pretty amazing, I mean, outfit and makeup job. And at first I thought, well, that could be Kristen Wiig, but it's really hard to tell with the white makeup and the white, you know, eyelashes and everything.
The whole package. But
I couldn't, you know, throughout, I was like, but I can't think of anybody else she must be. And I thought, it must be Kristen Wiig because who, you know, it, actually, the first time I saw her, I thought, is that, who's the British actress? The really...
Gonna have to narrow it down.
No, because she's very pale and she's she was in Doctor Strange. Yeah. She's like, you know who I mean.
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton. For a split second I thought is this a secret, you know, appearance by Tilda Swinton? And I think that was super well done. And then eventually I was like, okay, it's Kristen Wiig. I can't really see it, but I can't think who else it is. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's like, it's a spy movie, after all.
Mm-hmm. And it's part musical.
Yeah. Part
musical, yeah. I know.
I mean, we had the Tiny Mouse Orchestra toward the beginning that we never see again. So like, it's just a one-off gag. And that was it. But then, you know, we have the musical number welcoming them to the Hotel Vista... The Palm Vista Hotel, and we get Jamie's number and there's other musical stuff in here
like
too,
just the Florida,
yeah,
back to the peninsula. I'm never
like,
gonna
please,
stop
I want to go
that.
And get to a hotel and have them like dance around me like that, make me feel so special.
Amazing. I feel so bad for because of course in my mind I'm immediately like, those poor workers, want to do is prep their, you know, do their job. They just want to, you know, check people in and stuff. And they have to stop everybody and turn around and go and do. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness.
Middle-aged Nirvana was a line that I was like, I want to go there. I mean, in a lot of ways, the place was like a big cruise ship, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It totally has that aesthetic. Yeah.
Vibes, for sure.
Yeah.
The singing, I mean, that happens on cruise ships. Like, the whole staff has to come out and sing in a, musical number in the dining room.
At least they wouldn't have to do it every time somebody walks on the ship. I think like, that's the part that I was just, like, overwhelmed with, the idea that anyone could come into the hotel at any time. Whereas on the cruise ship, you have, like, nobody's going to walk in on the second day. Right. Hopefully not.
If they do, I'd be impressed. I'd probably sing for them.
Right?
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Jean, you said you are our Florida expert.
Yes.
How does this measure up to real life Florida?
I think it is complete fantasy. I'm sort of surprised they didn't set it on a cruise ship on some level, you know, thinking back to the Smooch Adventure on the cruise ship, the name of which I can't remember, but International Waters. But first of all, the water on the Florida coast is never that like azure turquoise blue. And it was filmed in Cancun or Puerto Vallarta, apparently. So, I mean, both, they say. I don't know which is which in the scenes. But I was kind of psyched. First of all, I get psyched when Florida is shown to be, like, possibly a paradise. There are parts of Florida and there are things in Florida that are actually very nice, even though you wouldn't know it if you read the news or social media these days. And also Florida is, it's definitely the place where people go from around the country, landlocked, cold places around the country, mm-hmm. To experience that always warm and sunny weather. The main thing that I related to as a Florida person who is also from a very Northern European genetic background, it was like being made fun of for being pale. I couldn't get tan. It's just not a thing my skin does. It just goes white to red and back to white. And the trauma of our villain, I was like, oh yeah, I totally get that. Came to this Florida location and she was an albino, essentially, and that's exactly what people would say. Like, oh, you're so pale. I'm like, now as a grown up, I go like, who comments on the color of somebody else's skin like that? Like, why is that considered acceptable? But yeah, so I thought that was interesting, and it definitely spoke to me.
I think the picture that people have of Florida being literally all coast is something that doesn't prepare people for the various parts of Florida that are just inland swamp or inland woodland, nothing.
Well, there's right. There's two parts of Florida. You have the coast and Disney. Like that's all that exists, right?
Right. And I mean, as states go, I mean, Florida probably has the most coastline per square acre, of surface, given that it is a peninsula, I don't know, but it looked very beautiful. I wanted to go there, but it does not exist.
Well, it does, just not in Florida.
Right.
Yes, we have to go to Mexico.
Right.
Let's talk about the relationships. And I think, ultimately, it is about friendship as much as it is about romance.
Yes.
So let's first start centering on Barb and Star, and what we feel about them and how they are as friends. Do any of you have a friend that you are so completely?
I do not have a friend.
You were my friend.
I would
friend,
like
Annette.
A friend.
I'm just waiting for friendship.
I am. I have no friends. You are all my employees.
I'm waiting for an official friendship.
I'm waiting for my official paycheck.
Right. Oh yeah. If we're employees,
I pay
if
you
don't get
with,
a paycheck. Does that mean
file taxes?
Well, we'll be official as soon as we finish this plot.
Yeah.
To take over the world.
Cool.
I do have a friend. I mean, I have several friends. I have some very very good friends, but one of my best friends is named Barb. So I'm going to tell her to watch this movie. I have a Barb. We can get on the phone now since we're separated by coast. She lives in New York City. We talk on the phone frequently, but when we are together, we can sit on the couch and do that kind of we can entertain ourselves with not very, what would seem to the outside world not very exciting conversation, but we are very entertained. So I like that. I mean, I liked it. I did love the friendship theme throughout. And I did think, I could see, actually, that seemed kind of realistic to me, all things considered, is that one divorcee, one widow would kind of bond, and I guess they lived together in Soft Rock, Nebraska. eventually, you know, probably the two of them were both out of sorts as a, you know, as single women, and they had, you know, this sort of that kind of conversational and language bond that they could just, you know, they could just entertain each other no mm-hmm. matter what.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to have a friend who reminds me very much of that relationship. Her and I, our daughters danced together, and we would spend 4 days, you know, pre-pandemic, the 4 days a week that our daughters were dancing, we would spend between 1 to 4 hours together each day. And just talked about nothing and important things. And it's, I miss that time together with her. We only have it one day a week now where we sit in our cars, you know, more than 6 feet apart, shouting to each other through the windows. And it's enough to keep us going. But I'm just like, I would love to, you know, our kids, well, maybe not be widows and divorced because we do love our husbands. But like, hey, living together, you know, we'll retire. Our husbands will live together and we'll live together and it'll be great. And that is, you know, dream. That's goals.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something about like you have a friendship like this, you have to sort of build up over time, too. So it's like you can have those people you connect with really quickly. But I think what you're seeing from them is that they have that history and that vocabulary that is years deep. So they can bring up like little pieces and things. And there's so many shorthands in their friendship that is just really enjoyable. Also, they've been friends so long that they just sort of do things the same. And I love that.
Yeah, I think that makes them good travel buddies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
I definitely have a friend who reminds me of the Barb and Star connection. But I'm not going to say who it is, because I'm also going to say that I don't know if we would survive a threesome with Jamie Dornan.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember being like, what just happened? Like, did that happen? Did I, like, that's what happened, right? And I just...
That's what happened.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that for them. I love that journey for them. I don't know if my friendship in real life could survive that.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful to have this friendship as an aspirational thing that we should and could aspire to have a connection that close to a good friend that, as Kirsten says, that could survive a threesome with Jamie Dornan. that's what we all hope for.
The threesome or the survival?
Both.
The friendship.
Yes.
But they also go through conflict and miscommunication.
Yeah.
And then resolve it in like with kindness and love, you know, so they never actually have a fight.
Right.
But they do have a disagreement, right? So I love how they just kind of talk it out when they actually catch each other in the web of lies. They just talk about it and then they get over it.
So often this type of a thing is like, you know, oh, just talk about it and it'll get fixed. And this felt very realistic with, you know, what they were choosing to say to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciated that because it would have been, it felt as fantastical as the movie was, it felt so grounded in reality, which mm-hmm. I feel like was really, really special. And part of what made this movie so great is they took it, you know, to these amazing places, but had that solid foundation to keep it grounded.
Yeah. And there was this one point where Star says, like, I'm sorry that I lied to you. And Barb's like, it's okay. I knew you were trying to, you know, save my feelings. And I was like, right. Sometimes that's what a lie is about. And sometimes it is a good friend thing to do. Even though at the beginning where they were talking about, you know, how good of friends they were and how things had gone, you know, awry with their husband slash ex-boyfriend. And Star says, thank you for telling me, you know, that my boyfriend Carmine was having an affair with so-and-so. Not everybody would have done that. And that mm-hmm. also is like, mm-hmm. if you read the advice columns, which I do, you know, you're sort of, it's sort of a conundrum when you know somebody's significant other is doing a bad thing, whether you tell them or not. But ultimately, it is the right friend thing to do if it is, you know, the right situation. I don't know. Right. Anyway, yeah, that felt like real down to earth, as mm-hmm. Kathy said.
I also liked their honesty during when everything kind of starts to come out and everything is heading towards its sort of resolution. And they're like, you know, I'm mad at you and I'm upset and I'm angry, but like, let's just put that aside and literally go save Vista Del Mar because something bad is about to happen. And then by the end of it, like, literally it's friendship that saves the day.
No,
which seems kind of far-fetched and corny, but I still love it. And I don't, like, you know, the cynic in me would kind of think, well, that's just, like, that's kind of a cop-out. But I don't think that. I think it totally fits with everything that they do all along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the theme becomes sort of like that it's about loneliness versus friendship and that filling that gap with friendship instead of anger, and maybe if we just reached out a little more, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that when they split off and Star is having her nonstop bangathon with Edgar, and Barb is going from being handed a joint to going somewhere in a jungle with people, and you know, like in what I think of as drum circle land.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then Scooter jumping the Grand Canyon in the middle of Florida and running into folk hero Tommy Bahama, who's not just a clothing brand. He's real. He's really real. I enjoy that we get to see that aspect of it is great to have this kind of really tight friendship, but it helps to grow on your own and have some alone time, and not be afraid that friendship is going to go somewhere when you are away from it doing your own thing. I think that's so incredibly emotionally intelligent and so healthy.
Yes.
And two very different growth arcs that are important, you know, one about sort of fear and coming into your own and taking some chances and sort of finding yourself, and the other is like sort of losing the fear of others and like that a relationship is going to ultimately everyone will abandon you and so on, and just finding yourself free to love again is like, those are both really important things to learn, and they do it just so deftly.
And as they put in the script, when someone's dong reaches up inside of you and really touches you,
touches your heart.
That's important. It's important
touches
to get that.
Touches your heart.
Too. Your heart.
Is your dong that long? That's the thing you need to know from someone.
Metaphorically speaking.
Can that please be the title of this podcast?
I think maybe it can be the title. We got to slip it in for an incomprehensible and do it.
Yeah, we'll slip it in.
Oh, Kathy, slip it in.
Speaking of dongs, are we going to talk about romance then?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about Edgar and Star.
Sometimes you need a fishbowl-sized drink called the buried treasure.
Oh, my Lord. I would so drink that with my friends.
Yeah.
Would I take the pills?
Maybe.
I'd probably, like, whatever that syrup was, I'd probably drink that because I think it was
candy.
I'd
do the syrup.
Yeah. I'd want to make sure we get full consent before we all pop the pills.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see
make
the prescription
sure we know
label
what we're
and the
taking first. Yeah.
That was a great drink. That was a great bar scene. Especially, so like, I guess they never got to order the veal stuffed manatee.
Drats.
So you have Edgar, who is actually quite a bit younger than Star. But, you know, somehow they find their match on, what is it, the stairways? Hard wooden stairs. Hard
Sometimes stairs. You just want someone to tell you, bang me on those hard wooden stairs.
Mm-hmm. So vacations are for guys.
Yeah, like, that's what I've heard. A lover on this vacation. Like, that's a friend, right?
Right, that's what you like. Friends.
I didn't look up what their age difference is, and frankly didn't even think about it until now. I like that it doesn't really matter. I don't think it's even brought up in dialogue, but it really doesn't. It's the connection that they have, and that what they are both looking for is someone who wants to be with them and take care of them and have a fulfilling official couple relationship. And if that is what you're looking for, that's absolutely enough. You don't have to like all of the same music and all the same movies and all the same hobbies or anything. Right. Wanting that can absolutely be enough. And I think as ridiculous and wacky as all get out as this movie is, simply speaking, I don't see there being anything wrong with that or far-fetched about that. That's the kind of connection that so many of us spend so much of our lives wanting. And so as ridiculous as all the trappings around it are, I'm totally on board with the way that this screen relationship plays out. Unlike others, where the secret that's being kept is that one of them is going to destroy this town by unleashing killer mosquitoes planted by their sinister evil lair having non-official girlfriend. There are worse secrets to keep from a significant other.
But they also don't shame either Barb or North Star for having meaningless sex with Edgar. They also, and that was kind of her goal going in, and it was just like, oh, I'm just gonna have meaningless sex for now, and then they happen to fall in love, and that's also presented as that's a fine option too, and if it had ended there, that would have been okay. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Sometimes you get on that plane to Florida just to have some meaningless fun. And, well, that is the state motto of Florida, Jean.
Meaningless fun, we're all for it.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah. Well, and I do like the contrast between the two relationships, as Moises said, and just the way that evil Kristen was pulling him along on this string and just... You know, we don't even really know what their relationship was, if it was actually a relationship or just the promise of a relationship. That seems unclear.
She used him for his body and the keratin in his skin. I don't know.
Yeah. How dare she?
Who knows?
She used him to deliver the microchip.
Yeah.
Needed somebody that could be disposed of, but that she could trust enough to actually do what needed to be done, because of course the antidote was faked.
Yeah,
iced tea, lemon iced tea.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but yeah,
the only way she knew how to trust was through manipulation, right? Not actual freely given trust.
Yeah, where she's not trusting the other person, she's trusting herself to have manipulated the other person.
Mm-hmm. Grounds of a healthy relationship.
Well, and he's kind of the perfect choice, right? He's like a slightly older, white, handsome male. Like, you know, they can get shit done and no one's going to question them. So put on a Hawaiian Florida t-shirt and have a great vacation where you're going to kill everybody.
Yep.
And it's not like he's a super, super smart guy either. So he's more easy to control and not to question.
Yeah, he went to Irish secret agent school and graduated just fine.
Yes. He doesn't, he's not emotionally smart. He doesn't get that the official couple thing is a fantasy that is not going to happen with the evil villain of this movie.
I'm like, I don't even really know what her name is.
I read it multiple times.
Sharon
something? Yeah, something Gordon Fisherman. Yeah.
I think it's Sharon.
In the IMDb listing. And I don't remember it actually being mentioned.
Like, I feel like she just existed as an entity of evil.
I think she might have said it, like, I was born so-and-so, and then I was diagnosed with this condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she told her backstory, and
I did read something that said that, like, as they were writing that backstory, like, at one point it was so ridiculous and so long and so over the top, they kind of had to rein it in a little bit because they were like, okay, I think we've gone too far.
Yeah, this is their but version of reining
in. But that's good writing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I was going to say, how great is that they were able to recognize when it was too far?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like we are getting to the point where we can wrap it up and tell everyone, if you haven't watched it, you should definitely go watch it. But time for final thoughts, and we will start in the same order. We will start with Moises.
Oh, here I thought I was just going to finish my swamp walk. let's see. I love a movie where you can tell that they put so much effort into their villain backstory that they probably spent more than an entire afternoon going way deeper than they knew they even had to. That's in the directives. That's one of our bylaws. Is you mm-hmm. have to yes and that anytime that is presented to you, you have to take the whole thing. I love the dedication to the bit the whole way through. I love the very specific choices. You know, they drink the fishbowl sized drink, and then they're dancing their faces off to the Heart Will Go On dance remix specifically. Is A, very Florida nightclub. Like, go into the average nightclub in Miami to this day, you will hear that at some point in most of them that recycle a bunch of the same tunes that just plain work. The things where you don't know the origin of a bit, whether the Tommy Bahama thing was, let's have Andy Garcia play Tommy Bahama. And then they reverse engineered, we should make a Tommy Bahama reference at the beginning, where it's like, oh, Tommy Bahama. Oh, man, men dressed in Tommy Bahama. I mean, dreamboats, literally every one of them, obviously. I don't know what order the construction of the bits came from, but they all feel so beautiful, like they just fell down from heaven. the movie is just such a gift, and it's something that I really look forward to going to, like, rowdy repertory screenings of, where people are encouraged to be loud and react. You know, the same audiences that went nuts for specifically programmed rowdy screenings of Magic Mike, I feel like would be the exact same wonderful audiences to watch this movie with. It is so full of joy. It is so delightful. It is so wonderful. And guys who refuse to watch it are idiots. So that's all.
Here, here.
Yes. I don't even know what to say about this movie. It came at a time when that is desperately what I needed to see. I needed to know that this movie existed, and I needed it in my life. And I love the idea. I want to buy the DVD to watch the behind the scenes stuff on this. I want 3 to 10 hours of behind the scenes because I feel like they had so much fun, and I want to feel and see the fun from every angle. Like, share that with me. I want to experience it. I want to witness it. I want to be it. Feel it. Let me be a part of it. If you've listened through this far and we haven't convinced you to figure out how to watch this movie, I don't know what to tell you.
the Reba McEntire of it all.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
I don't know how we didn't talk about that yet, but my, like, don't we all just need Trish the Water Spirit in our life? I think we all do.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember as that moment was happening, I was like, Annette, is it the turtles? Are the turtles going to save them?
And it's like,
is it the turtles?
Yeah,
please write up on like a bunch of sea turtles. And then it was 10 times better than that.
Yes.
So that, like, that ending for me just like sealed everything. So that's what I'm going to end it with. Watch this movie. Love this movie. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your dogs, everyone, tell your crabs, everybody.
And I've, as many things as we've discussed as happened in the movie, I feel like we also have not spoiled the movie for people because there's so much to enjoy.
So yeah. Much.
It's packed. Well, what thing I will say is, like, I do love my musicals. I also like my semi-musicals, like this one is, with just randomly, you know, inserting scenes where the characters break out in song. Seagulls in the Sand is stuck in my head. We talked about Titanic disco remix. I mean, not Titanic, but My Heart Will Go On, which cracked me up. But also a movie that, I mean, and Cheeseburger in Paradise while they're ordering food. And I'm like, okay, now I need a cheeseburger. But a movie that starts with Barbara Streisand and Barry Gibb singing Guilty and the lyrics being mouthed by the young devious paperboy was just brilliant. And I was like, right from the beginning, I was like, I'm going to like this movie. I can already tell.
Yeah, for me, I think what it leaves me with is this deep desire to go on vacation with my friends.
Yes.
To some sort of like place like this where it's like all you're there to do is hang out, hopefully not have to stop a you know, vicious revenge plot, and just dance the night away, drink giant fish bowls of booze.
Yes.
Just have some fun and like talk about nonsense for like a week. That's like, and just, you know, I just crave that so deeply. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but when it does, I will relish that feeling so much.
Yes.
I just pulled a slip out of the talking jar. Oh, and nonsense is written on it, so it's going to happen.
Like, seriously, I want a jar of topics and to sit around with people, and I just think that would be so,
you know,
ridiculously fun.
You know,
that would
do
be
it
a, that would be a real tit flapper.
It would be a tit flapper. I feel that I will also watch this movie. I've already watched it 3 times in the last week just because it's that good. But I just do feel like it's going to be one of those comfort movies you go back to and keep rewatching and keep quoting from and join us. Maybe we will do an incomprehensible for it.
I totally need to make a tropical cocktail.
Well, we will all be drinking out of fish bowls.
Clearly.
Obviously.
Where can I find a fish bowl?
Dollar store.
The pet store.
Yeah. Not that I've done this before.
I like the dollar store idea.
That was one of my favorite things about the show Cougar Town, is it inspired people to find larger and larger things that are not actually stemware to put entire bottles of wine in.
That's how you're classy. It's only one glass.
Yeah. Also set in Florida, Cougar Town.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Confession, I've never watched that one.
It's good.
I haven't either.
Me neither.
It's fun. It's a fun show.
Well, I think we will leave it here, and we will be back again soon. But in the meantime, thank you for suggesting this and joining us, Moises.
Annette, make sure that you find your shimmer.
Oh, I feel like I've lost it in the last year. I need to go find it. And thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Director Annette. I'm excited to go on vacation with you. And maybe we'll find Jamie Dornan.
We can gaze longingly at him. And thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you, Director and Agents. This was a lot of fun. And I can't wait till we can all be at the Swim Up bar and have a couple cocktails.
Bars.
And love get thrown out of the hotel until they tell us that actually we can check into the hotel.
Yeah. Yes, that was so brilliant. And thank you, Jean.
I think we can find a Jamie Dornan equivalent, so especially if we have one of those buried treasure cocktails, we'll be fine.
And we will like all that share him.
And the cocktail.
Well, we will see you again soon, agents. And until next time, stay safe. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of The Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon.